Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
MLB analyst Craig Calcaterra, author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter.
I've been not a fan of the tomahawk chop for years. I am traditionally a Braves fan. I've been a Braves fan for like 36 years. As soon as the chop started in the 90s, it started to bother me. It still bothers me. But what really takes it to the next level was in 2019 in the playoffs, when a pitcher for the Cardinals with a Native American heritage talked about how that was offensive to him. The Braves actually stopped and they said, you know what? He's right. And they didn't play it while he was in the game. And that's a very small thing to do. But what it is an acknowledgement that it is offensive to somebody. Well, yesterday in the game, Hauser, the reliever for the Brewers, came in. He is a member of the Cherokee Nation. He was in trouble. He had two men on. The pitching coach came to the mound. And then all of a sudden, the drumbeat starts. The scoreboard starts showing the tomahawk chop. And the fans start doing it again.
Craig Calcaterra with Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
We love talking baseball with Craig Calcaterra on Tuesdays, so let's do so right now. Craig is on Twitter, at Craig Calcaterra. He is the author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter that you should be reading every morning to start your baseball day or your sports day. He joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And, as always, check him out on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. He is rocking his Braves hat today. And you're kind of stealing my bit, Craig, in that people always say that I take the fun out of things, that there's even, like, in our Twitch chat, there's like a bot that counts the number of things I have sucked the joy out of. And when you look at the Astros and the Braves, on one hand, we could say, okay, it's a really intriguing matchup. And on the other hand, as you argued, well, I guess somebody's got to win it.
Look, this is not a matchup that, if you're not already a fan of either the Braves or the Astros, that you're going to be really enthused about. I mean, the Astros rap sheet over the last couple of years is pretty well documented. They are arguably the most hated team in baseball and probably will be until the Altuve, Bregman, Correa core goes away, just for reasons. That's how it works. The Braves, low level, longer period of time, have annoyed people for any number of reasons. You can go back to them erroneously referring to themselves as America's team back on TBS in the 80s, to where they just make everybody roll their eyes. This is no one's idea of a great matchup, unless you happen to be only in it for the baseball, which on paper, on the field, it's actually a really good matchup. Or if you are a Braves fan or an Astros fan.
Well, when you put it like that, I'm really excited. I do laugh, though, because when it comes to the Braves, I'm often reminded of seeing them when interleague play first became a thing. They came to the ballpark in Arlington, and the ballpark never sold out, ever, because the Rangers were bad. And I was sitting next to my colleague at the time, and he goes, "It's because of all these dang Gen Xers who grew up watching it on TBS. And I wonder, I'm not kidding, that is a direct quote, except he didn't say dang. And I'm wondering how much of that still lives on, given the average age of a baseball fan and who's watching this World Series.
Oh, it's an absolutely huge thing still. I am proof positive of that. I have never lived in Georgia. I have never lived in the Deep South. I became a Braves fan in 1985 when I moved to West Virginia, and I could no longer watch the Detroit Tigers, which were my team when I lived in Michigan as a little kid. And I just became watching the Braves because that's what was on. Ted Turner put them all over America. There is a huge, huge Braves fan contingent of basically people 35 and older who watch them on TBS constantly for, you know, years and years, decades even. They all went away when they went to, like, the Fox Sports South or wherever they went away, and they no longer showed up on TBS starting several years ago. But it's a huge thing. The America's Team thing was a giant joke. But there was a core of truth to it, in that you can find Braves fans literally anywhere. And yeah, I'm a dang Gen Xer too.
I think you pointed out something important in regard to Dusty Baker, not just what the Braves meant to him and what he meant to the Braves and that tie-in, but you pointed out sort of a logical fallacy in the classic Baker clubhouse button push of, only people in this locker room believe in us. It is an us, the oldest us against them thing in the world. And to some extent, that's worked. But he's trying to do two things. He's trying to say that the Astros have taken ownership of their transgressions, when also saying that no one else believes in us. And I think you made a great point. You can't do both. You can't say it's us against the world and then say we are being open and honest and owning what we did wrong. Something in there disconnects.
Yeah, the against the world thing means that we are in opposition. What is the world saying? The world is saying you guys are cheaters, you're illegitimate, and we're mad at you. If you are against that, that is the very antithesis of taking ownership and atoning for your sins, okay? If you get in a fight with your wife and you say, oh, yes, I'm very, very sorry, but it's me against you, you did not resolve the fight. That is not how it goes. And I don't begrudge Dusty Baker for using that as a motivational tool within his clubhouse. If you've got a bunch of ballplayers there who are getting booed constantly every time you're on the road for 6 months of the season, it's probably pretty useful for you to say, don't listen to those guys. It's you against them. Be stronger. I mean, that's a good motivational tool. But you don't go out there and seeing the fans on Twitter and as a PR position saying it's us against the world and also expect to be given credit for moving on beyond your transgressions from 2017. That, again, were only discovered a year ago. So I find that to be a disconnect. I also find it crazy, as I've been dealing with on Twitter all morning, Astros fans saying, when are you going to let it go? When are you going to drop it? I'm sorry. This was one of the biggest cheating scandals in the history of baseball. Over 150 years, this is a top fiver, okay? Maybe a top threer. We still talk about the Black Sox. We still talk about 10-cent beer night, for crying out loud. We talk about steroids. To expect the whole baseball watching world to never mention the Houston Astros sign stealing thing again, a year and a half after it was discovered, is ludicrous. But that's what you get when you mention that on social media right now.
And it just goes back to the same thing we keep saying. When Rob Manfred is going to cape for them and call the World Series trophy a piece of metal and try to dismiss it because they didn't do their job in providing justice, then we're the ones who are left with trying to mop it up in some way. But here's the real upsetting part for baseball fans. Take out the cheating. It's the fact that for all the teams who say, this team was built to win for years, this team was built to be a dynasty, and they're not. Cubs, not the Nationals, same result. They are. And they have been, mm-hmm. And they've proved that.
I think the thing with the Astros that there's a big disconnect on, you hear this from defensive Astros fans sometimes saying, well, you said we were a bunch of frauds who only won a World Series because we cheated. Well, we're showing you now we got another pennant. Well, no one's really saying that. I mean, I think what people are saying is you are a really good team anyway, and you cheated. Those are two different things. You didn't even have to. I mean, what's being shown right now is that they didn't have to. They're a really solid team, and no one thinks for a moment that they are stealing signs right now. And they didn't have to in 2017. They were a really solid team that was built to win and won, and they now got three pennants in 4 years or something like that. And that's the tragedy there is you didn't have to. Barry Bonds didn't have to take steroids to be the best player in baseball. He already was. That's the tragedy. And that's the story, I think, that gets sort of glossed over here as we try to do this sort of, either or kind of comparison of you're either good or you're bad, you're a fraud or you're illegitimate. No, it doesn't work that way. You can be bad and be good.
Yes, and that is, I think, what happened here. But also, the idea of if you do want to get to a World Series in the past 5 years, you have to go through Houston to do it or win it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're insanely talented. And it also, that's the other thing. Baseball parity has been crazy, crazy good if you're into parity. I mean, I think if the Braves win this year, we'll have something like, 15 different World Series winners in 20 years or something crazy like that. That's almost unprecedented in baseball, and that's really good for the game. But the fact that Houston keeps coming in over and over again to challenge for it, that tells you something about that team, too.
Little news note from earlier today, Odyssey Sports MLB insider John Heyman mentioned that he believes that Javier Baez is returning to the Cubs or likely to return to the Cubs in free agency. And my first question is, all right, at what cost? And then you think, is that the right move for this Cubs team that is clearly in between right now?
Yeah, I didn't see that, by the way. I was too busy fighting with Astros fans, so I've wasted my morning on things that I shouldn't have been doing. But I can see it being a good move. I could certainly see it from Baez's point of view. I don't think he really enjoyed his little sojourn to Queens in the second half of the season. I think he kind of realized how good he had it in Chicago with the fan base and with the comfort level and all that kind of stuff. He's a guy that's going to cause problems, I think, in a lot of markets that don't get him or aren't chill enough to accept his whole deal. Chicago is one that does. So that's something. I think he's still young enough to where he could certainly form the backbone of a team, even if it is in between. The big question a lot of people have, you listen to Jed Hoyer, he's saying it's not going to be this years-long rebuild. We're going to kind of reload. We're going to try to get competitive quickly. If that's true, you want Javier Baez around. If what a lot of us cynics are thinking, that now the Ricketts are just going to, mow it all down and be content with losing for 5 or 6 years, maybe not so much. But I think it's a good sign if that's a rumor out there. And if he does sign with Chicago, not only do you get a player you like back, that's probably a signal that the winning window is closer than we might have thought.
Meanwhile, you make an excellent point about the San Diego manager search. The retreads is, I believe, the word you used, but that is oftentimes what happens, especially every time you see the list. Mike Schilt being reportedly interviewed, but I'm hoping that somehow Ron Washington does get a job out of all of this.
Well, Ron Washington was, I think, the runner-up. Not that we ever name official runners-up, but he was a finalist when Tingler was hired in San Diego, and obviously Washington through his time in Texas had relationships with AJ Preller. He certainly was an excellent manager in Texas. He has certainly been a very, very effective coach, both in Oakland and in Atlanta. There's a lot of sentiment out there that Washington deserves another shot at a job. And if you can get a multiple pennant winning manager that just has results everywhere he goes, both as a manager and a coach, I think you can't pass that up. When you hire somebody who got fired from another job after not meeting expectations and has never really accomplished anything, like Mike Schilt or like Luis Rojas from the Mets, who interviewed with the Padres earlier this week, that's a retread. It's not a retread just because you're hiring a manager who had another job before. Most of them did. It's a retread when you're just getting somebody because his highest qualification is, well, he knows where the manager's office is. That's no good. Get somebody inspiring. Get somebody who has shown results. I think Ron Washington would be an excellent hire there. He would command immediate respect in that clubhouse, and that's the biggest problem they have right now is a lack of a leadership. It's not a talent issue. It's a leadership and a focus issue. That's what Washington brings to the table.
The AP reports on the likelihood of a work stoppage, which is sort of a passive way of saying lockout without saying lockout. And I always rely on you and others when it comes to some of these things, because my default setting for national reporting around any, especially baseball labor negotiation, is reporters are either actively carrying water for the owners or they're doing so passively and they don't even seem to know it because of the experience and control and manipulativeness with which the owners have been able to leak things and control the narrative. I just, my default setting is always that we're being pushed an ownership-friendly storyline with anything about a CBA.
Yeah, absolutely are, and it's not just recently. This has been the story of baseball labor for at least 50 years since it became more of a front page sports news kind of thing.
And I know because I was a part of it. I know when I was younger and I wasn't as critical a thinker and wasn't aware as a reporter, I was victimized by it. I fell for it too.
And here's a big reason for it. It's not just that there are guys that are carrying water. You know, reporters thrive on information. If we don't have information, we can't report anything. The Players Association and the union, they don't really leak things. They don't go to the media to put their story out there. Once in a while, you'll see something. But just as a rule, and especially right now with the leadership of the MLB Players Association, I talk to these guys and I say, hey, can I write something about that? They're like, no, that's off the record. Okay, they don't want that stuff in the press. And there's a reason for that. It's they don't think that there's any upside to them negotiating through the press. So you're not going to get talking points that are player-friendly from the union. But Major League Baseball sources constantly cultivate the press on that. And if you were given a piece of information, hey, negotiations last week got tense when the players demanded something unreasonable. Wow, that's information. That's news. I can report it. And that's the story that gets out there. It's hard to know that as a reader. It's hard to know that even as a reporter if you're not always doing sports news, business news, or labor or anything. But just be very, very wary of what you see out there. Almost all of it is going to be slanted towards an ownership MLB kind of a position. So you can't always count on it.
I also just wonder about the floor, too, this idea of the whole salary floor and how that's going to affect things when you're also talking about potentially a change to the ceiling with that competitive balance tax.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Major League Baseball's players and the union have for years, as just almost a religious point, said we will not agree to a salary cap. Well, what we've had, though, in the last 10 or 15 years, we have what most of us call the luxury tax, but what's technically called the competitive balance tax. That's like the tax that you pay if your payroll goes over a certain amount. For the first few years, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, everybody, they don't care. They'll go over it. They'll spend whatever they want. But in the last decade or so, that's become a de facto salary cap. Teams don't go over it. And if they do even momentarily, they immediately get back down under it the year after. It has turned into a salary cap. And so that's challenging the player's idea of whether we can agree to a salary floor, which usually means a salary cap, and it's really complicated in negotiations. The only thing we've heard this year so far is the owners want to actually reduce that ceiling on the competitive balance tax, which would effectively be lowering a salary cap, which seems crazy to me. That's probably why we have kind of an impasse and a looming lockout coming.
I want to thank you for a reference today that warmed the cockles of my heart,
is it another old man one?
It's the movie Bubba Hotep. The fact that you would throw that into your discussion of why the White House won't release some of the JFK information, and I came to Bruce Campbell fandom relatively late. I actually found Army of Darkness. I was too young to understand what the Evil Dead was doing when I first saw Evil Dead, and then I got back into it with like the combination of bong hits and Army of Darkness. And then, in all seriousness, it like really sort of got the jokes. And then when Bubba Hotep came out and it was like just the perfect distillation of that sense of humor and being able to sit in a theater with a stupid grin on my face just for an hour and a half. It's when you try to explain that movie to people, they sort of start walking backwards and like shuffling away from you because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I went down. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'll give you the elevator pitch of Bubba Hotep. All it is Elvis and JFK, who is an elderly black man, are both in a nursing home, and then they have to fight off an undead attack to save the world. I don't know what's so hard to understand about that. That sounds like a great movie, but it's true.
And the fact that it's Bruce Campbell and Ossie Davis, and I mean, and no spoilers, but the cutaway near the third act of the movie, when he's actually in his room, actually has the blue carpeting of the Oval Office, and he's got the red hotline phone like from Failsafe. I mean, it's just glorious.
Look, I don't know. We just learned over the weekend President Biden is holding back more JFK assassination documents that were supposed to have been declassified years and years ago. We don't know what's in there. We don't know what happened to JFK. That's all I'm saying.
It's got to be something, right? Like, there's no way they'd be lying about... No, I'm not like this. I'm generally not like this, but I seriously think there is something in there that is going to make one of those Onion headlines about Sam Giancana and the Freemasons and everything else look like child's play.
I am not an Oliver Stone kind of guy. I don't think this was like this multi-layered conspiracy theory. But the fact that you're holding this stuff out even now, 58 years later, that's what makes the conspiracy theories happen. So at this point, I am going to defend the conspiracy theorists. If you want to think that JFK is actually living in a nursing home somewhere right now, I'm with it, because prove me wrong, man.
Dude, they've said aliens exist before they've released this information. Think about that. They confirmed UFOs and we're all like, okay. They haven't said anything about this. Does that not tell you
there's
exactly what we're seeing here?
There's a 112-year-old guy. There's like a 112-year-old guy still hanging on somewhere. And once he goes, then we'll let it go, because it's going to be really embarrassing to him. That's all I can think of.
Is this where I make a Salman Rushdie reference just to complete the bit? All right.
Craig Calcaterra, thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
That is Craig Calcaterra, always informative and entertaining. And after that, we will descend back into the depths of your Chicago Bears. There's been a lot said, there's been a lot thought that we have to sort through. And Brad Biggs this morning brought up the idea that maybe, there's some help coming for a beleaguered part of this team. That'll be our jumping off point for Bears discussion next on The Score.
When you win, it builds that confidence. And then really, too, it allows these guys to get back to what we had during those two games that we won against Vegas and Detroit, of really feeling good no matter who you're playing. You know, you feel great going into it, and you come out with the win. So we're going to have to – we got to build to that, I guess, is my answer. We got to build to it. It's not going to happen by saying, oh, yeah, well, we can just kind of get to it and then hope it happens. No, we got to play a real – you know, a team right now in San Fran that is going to come with everything that they got. We got to come and bring our best at home, and we got to get back on track. We get back on track and get that one win, and then go ahead and take it to the next one. That momentum is great. And what I'd love to see is a nice win streak. You know, we've a couple years ago, we went through that 4-game losing streak. Last year, we go through a 6-game losing streak. And I think that's what we're all feeling right now. We feel that. And then you feel the lack of scoring. We feel that. So let's get back to scoring. Let's get back to playing as a team. Let's get back to winning. And let's do it consistently.
Yeah, losing streak.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. We know what this feels like. We're feeling that right now. We're in our comfort zone, these losing streaks, and we come together and show our resiliency. This is Bears football, right in that losing streak where we know how to deal with it. Are you kidding me? I'm going to barf on my feet.
They didn't tell me to, or what is it? They didn't hire me to run the I formation. They hired me to run no formation.
They're going to be in wrong formations depending on who the quarterback is, so we can get in a nice, comfortable losing streak. Oh, this is brutal. But Brad Biggs does say that Larry Borum may be coming back soon, so we have the latest false hope for everything to get better based on a fifth-round rookie who apparently overperformed before it mattered.
I have some good news, but it doesn't regard the Bears.
What?
I have not one, but two. What? Breaking pieces of Twitch news. Yeah, that's right. Number one, you know how you told Craig Calcaterra that there's a command on Twitch where you can take the fun out of things, but it really hasn't counted all the things you've taken out. It just counts the amount of times people have entered the command.
Yes.
Do you know what number we're about to be at?
I don't.
Not 82.
Oh,
not
wow.
84.
So the next thing out of which I take the fun will be the 83rd one. So, but now see, people are going to try to like bait me into it, but it's got to come naturally. No, and before your second nugget,
we're here. We just did it. It happened. We've done the command 83 times. Everybody give yourselves a round. All right. Number
two. Weird. Wait, breaking news on the score. Brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Protect your privacy online for free with DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
Guess who's not just in studio?
Huh?
Rick Camp is on Twitch.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
Everybody's doing it, Dan.
No, I am. I have an account, but I think I forgot how to log in or forgot my login information. I could get on there. It's just I'm so busy either responding to texters or trying to be in the various chats that we have and everything else that we do. It moves too fast for my old brain.
Yeah, I catch every 55th comment or so. But I just appreciate it, and I thought it was funny. And you know how I love basic code, so I was a big fan of the Twitch command being used 83 times. And Rick Camp is now on, so you can talk to Rick.
You pointed out that Dan Orlovsky and Rex Ryan, get up on ESPN, had about a minute's worth of some in-depth discussion as far as Bears dysfunction goes. And it has to do with Justin Fields' performance and why things happened that probably shouldn't have happened.
This is what the narrative is going to be about Justin Fields, right? He had 5 turnovers.
Right.
Well, 2 of the fumbles are 100% on coaching, singling up a 5th string tackle on one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. And the second interception goes off Mooney's hands. Yeah. So what do you guys want from the kid?
The thing that is funny to me, like the 12 guys on there, when they say that on the headset, it only looked like Tampa had 12 guys on the field because you can't block anybody. By the way, number 50 is one player. He ain't 2 guys, all right? He was killing you. And to me, it's right. Like, can the guy get better? Of course he can get better.
He's a
damn rookie.
Right, yeah.
Of course he can get better. But you're right. It's ridiculous. Here we are back again. They're blocking with a 5th-string tackle, a dad said, against one-on-one all the time. How is he not chipped 100% of the time?
Dan Orlovsky and Rex Ryan. Every time Rex Ryan finishes a sentence, I immediately have to tack on, now let's go get an effing snack. I always will end up there.
Good advice.
Well, sure. I mean, snacks are good. But did you read Dan Wetzel's column, by the way, on Yahoo? Because he really drilled down on this idea of the interception that he threw because of being told free play 12 men. He was told that. This is a rookie. Before the headset shuts off, 12 men, free play. You can't be wrong on that.
No, and it's not his job to be... He's the last line of defense because he's the one executing.
But Nagy put it back on him.
To double check that.
But Nagy basically said it was. That's the problem. Nagy's like, well, we got to talk about that, and he's got to understand. Like, are you really saying... Really, that a rookie quarterback told 12 men free play go is then it's his job to recognize my coach is wrong. Therefore, that now triggers a completely different flow chart. If that's really on him, you're doing it wrong.
Well, and it just goes back to what we've talked about before. It goes back to even what Wani said. There's nothing proving us wrong in any of this. That's my real concern, is that it's the idea of, what are you really trying to do out here? Are you really trying to help him? Because it still all kind of feels like rookie hazing in a way. The game plan, hanging him out to dry with this, not knowing if there's 12 men on the field. That goes in like the one job department. You have one job and you can't recognize whether or not there's a free play when you're sitting in the press box. Like, is that really the truth? That's a huge problem to me. And then there was a thread yesterday that Nate Tice, our friend of the show, put out. He does the Athletic Football Show with Robert Mays, and it's the captions are satire about Justin Fields holding on to the ball too long. And it is just play after play after play after play where he has no time to do anything. And then the criticism of how he doesn't check down, which he does. And when he goes, go back to last week, when he's telling you on that free play, this is where my eyes were supposed to be. This is where they are telling them to go. What is that message? That message isn't him telling you what he's thinking. That's him telling you what he's told to think. By who?
By Nagy and by Bill Lazor. And ideally, it should work the other way. It should work in the other direction. Instead of being told what to see, they should be asking him when he gets back to the sideline, what did you see? And then they figure out why. Where did your eyes go? Where do your eyes want to go? Where do you think they should go? Work with him in his direction, not imposing rigid rules about what and when. That's just, it's so self-defeating to do that. And then it speaks to, do they really want this guy out there or not? And are they dedicated to letting him grow on his terms rather than theirs?
And once again, if your system is so dependent on a veteran quarterback, regardless of athletic ability, because of the knowledge it takes to run it, or the idea that they're probably having to freelance because your design isn't correct in their eyes either, and they just aren't telling you because they're a little more savvy about it, then what are we doing? Who needs to take a look at things? What is the why here? Because it seems like we all know what the why is.
It goes back to what Olin Krutz said. Look in a mirror. Some of these self-imposed difficulties and headwinds that are just incredibly internally conflicted that don't need to be. That's the why behind too much of it. But they're comfy.
Unless the why is your job is on the line at the end of the season.
I don't know.
Then it's a different calculus now, isn't
it? Certainly happy in this little mini losing streak where they know how to come together and they know how to deal with it and they know how to feel good about each other. We have the Midday Midway coming up next. I think I may have the apotheosis of American stupidity.
I don't know. I think I've got one too that's pretty close.
Great. We'll celebrate stupid next on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
An absolute rip-roaring show to start as we talked about the Bulls stealing a win in Toronto last night. They are 4-0 for the first time since the Jordan second three-peat era. We also lauded Zach LaVine for his post-game comments that appeared to establish high expectations for the Bulls. They're not going to get overjoyed about a game that they nearly frittered away, and they're not going to pretend otherwise. Craig Calcaterra was terrific on Baseball at 10. He talked World Series and Javier Baez and labor negotiations and cult comedy horror movies as well. And then we got to some more thoughts on the struggling Bears.
And shout out to Zach LaVine for his first time winning four NBA games in a row in his
career.
Yeah,
how about that?
We forgot to mention that.
You're right.
That deserves a little celebration. Yes, yeah, you deserve the air horn for that. Congrats, Zach LaVine.
Never won four straight regular season games until last night.
It's so unreal. Sad. NBA games, yeah. I guess that has to be regular season because, yeah.
Playoffs were first last year, yep.
Jeez. All right, who's stupid should go first?
Yours.
All right. Okay. It's just too good. A hiker lost on a mountain in Colorado, ignored calls from rescuers, and didn't get rescued for 24 hours because he didn't recognize the number.
Oh, sorry, dude. I had it ring directly to voicemail.
Are you trying to die? So, the hiker was reported missing around 8 p.m. on October 18th after failing to return where he was staying.
Oh,
this is
God.
Mount Elbert in Colorado. And repeated attempts to contact the man through calls, texts, and voicemails were ignored, according to a statement released by the agency tasked with rescuing him.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Like, it gets worse.
you wouldn't maybe go out of your way to be receptive to any sort of communication?
Here, it gets worse. Like, there was money and resources and human effort wasted on this. Five rescue team members were deployed at around 10 p.m. to search high-probability areas on Mount Elbert, but returned around 3 a.m. the following morning after failing to locate the missing hiker on the 4,400-meter-high peak, 14,440 feet. I'm reading this on The Guardian. They try to sneak in that metric system on you. A second team set out at 7 a.m. the next day to search areas where hikers typically lose the trail, only to discover the man had returned back to his place of lodging at 9:30 in the morning. You aren't allowed to walk anymore, dude.
It's like that commercial where the guy gets rescued and, like, the resort sent me. Like, resort?
But that's a commercial, and it's funny. Right. What is this song playing in the background?
American Idiot. Yeah, it's American Idiot.
Oh, it is. It is indeed. Like, are you the worst person? Like, multiple rescue teams stopped what they were doing in their day to rescue you.
Yeah,
and
it's
you
still,
can't be bothered with answering your phone or text? How do you ignore text like that?
Wait, I still like the
dates.
Story.
I should know how people ignore texts.
I like the one we did about the Turkish guy that joined his own search party. Remember?
That was the
like
best.
He was drunk and naked and went into the woods and his family couldn't find him. And then he's like, oh, a search party? I'll help you out. Who are you? They started calling his name. And he's like, I'm right here. Oh, hello.
That's funny, though. None of this is funny. This is just dumb.
This is dumber. This is dumber.
Nah.
A&W has come out with a new burger that they're marketing. And you know, I don't know if you're here or there on A&W's food, but A&W has come out with what they've called the 3/9-pound burger. Now, for those of us that were... Oh, just wait! For those of us that were always told to reduce fractions to the lowest common denominator, a little math quiz here... 3/9 equals what?
1/3.
Yes, Layla is absolutely right here in our American Stupid Showcase Showdown. It would be a 1/3-pound burger, but there's a reason why they're not calling it that. Back in the 1980s, when the McDonald's Quarter Pounder was the burger to beat, A&W had the great idea to debut a 1/3-pound burger at the same price as a Quarter Pounder. This is from the website The Takeout. It's more meat for your dollar. What could go wrong? Well, unfortunately, the burger was a total flop for reasons that A&W didn't see coming. In focus groups, following the disastrous launch of the 1/3-pound burger, customers indicated they thought 1/3 pound of meat was smaller than 1/4 because 4 is a bigger number than 3.
Well, that explains a lot about our current state of affairs.
So people considered the burger a ripoff and not a deal. So now to get that denominator number inflated, it's the 3/9-pound burger. So think about what we missed out on. That had that worked, we might all have been eating larger burgers for the same price as the iconic Quarter Pounder. Absolutely amazing to me.
I'm not an idiot.
So, with Rick Camp opening up a mic here, I don't know, is there an I'm Fat podcast official position? Like, have you put out sort of a stated white paper on A&W fast food? Because I know, like, when it comes to Dairy Queen and A&W and some of these sort of tertiary brands, I don't know if there is a solid position that you guys have.
Oh, did we lose Rick?
I think so.
Rick, can he answer on Twitch? He's on Twitch. Maybe we lost Rick.
Yeah, I just got some technical issues. But I guess I've had good and I've had bad. But there used to be when I was a little kid. I don't know if they still have A&W drive-throughs. But there was something about coming back from a canoe trip and that big Ford Econoline van that's dragging the trailer with all the canoes on it. After 4 days in the wilderness eating gorp, being able to pull up to a A&W drive-through and everybody gets root beer floats and burgers and fries and all is good in the world.
Can I since we're in this place talking about root beer, can I talk about something real quick?
Of course.
So, I know that Wisconsin has like awesome cheese and Spotted Cow, but you also have this root beer that me and my friends are obsessed with.
What's that?
And that is this Stewart's Diet Root Beer. And it's like pretty awesome. I don't know how to explain it. My friend who has type 1 diabetes tipped me off to it. I do not, but I still enjoy it because it's great. I mean, it's diet root beer, and it is absolutely fantastic. And you can only get it in Wisconsin, and it bothers me because I can't get up there easily. I'd have to take a train or something. So we try to make runs every now and then to get it, but it's not always successful. And I feel like they're hiding something great from the rest of us.
It's interesting. I thought you were going in a different direction because there's another great Wisconsin root beer called Sprecher from the Sprecher Brewing Company. And they apparently use a freshly harvested Wisconsin honey. And I didn't really know of it until it was when Nick Shepkowski and Ashley got married in Lake Geneva. And one of the hotels where they had a room block was the Cove Hotel in Lake Geneva. I think we stayed there. And there's a Sprecher's branded restaurant that is attached to the hotel. And I wouldn't have otherwise tried their root beer, but it was fresh on tap there. And it's incredible.
Well, I like the diet root beer. I don't want root beer with all like the sugar because I can't handle that. And you guys know me on caffeine. I go crazy and start bouncing off the walls. So I don't need all the sugar. That's why I like the diet root beer from the Stewart's.
From Stewart's? I think they have a diet version. I think they do. But
if
it is...
If Stewart's had a diet like cream soda, I would be totally in.
Yeah, you and my mom, who was always a cream soda fanatic, and she was very specific about which cream sodas were real and which cream sodas were not, and we always trusted her until the one day she brought home Werner's ginger ale, and that's when I'm like, yeah, this one's a no, Mom. This tastes like medicine and wood shavings. I probably would like it now, knowing me and knowing my adult palate. But as a kid, you're like, yay, ginger ale. Take one sip. You're like, ew, I don't like pop anymore.
Aw, pop. You guys know how I feel about this, too. I say soda.
No matter what.
Which is really rebellious, given my roots. Because I should say Coke all the time, but I just don't.
Yeah, but Coke is more southeastern, right? Isn't that a thing? Is Texas also all carbonated beverages are a Coke?
Yeah, they're like, what kind of Coke do you want?
It's like, well, if I wanted a Coke, I would order a Coke. And if I want something else, I'll just order that thing. I don't drink much of any of it anymore, really. So it's not an issue for me. But now I'm thinking about Werner's. And just thinking about it gets that Werner's taste in my mouth. And yeah.
Oh, I have some breaking news on this front as well.
What's that?
So we have a supervisor who goes to Milwaukee.
Yes, we do.
And apparently he can hook me up because you know where Milwaukee is?
It's in Wisconsin.
It is. So that means I can probably get some Stewart's.
Well, you should hoard it for all of your friends and then you could start a black market.
It's not a black market if you know where to get it and you can get it reasonably.
Yeah, but if people can't, then you can make money off of them. There's a lot of stupid out there. That was the theme of our segment.
The hand sanitizer fad? Nah, I'm good.
That is the Midday Midway, and that leads us up to more in-depth talk of Bears quarterbacking and communication and coordination. Sage Rosenfels has watched the tape of whatever Justin Fields was trying to do, and he will give us his thoughts on all of it next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.